I'm not even related to Microsoft, and I am not an expert in what I'm going to talk about. I've started developing in Roslyn. Sorry.
It's great.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've started developing with Roslyn out of need. So I just found out about it in about 1.5 months. And I've started using it ever since, and I haven't stopped yet. So what I'm going to transmit to you is my experience with it in a very practical way, and try to at least give you the knowledge and the tools and the ideas so that you can pick on from this and move on to your own projects. I named this Behind the Squiggle because that's exactly what Roslyn does. It was open sourced by Microsoft through the .NET Foundation. It was open sourced in 2014. And it literally gives you access to everything that Visual Studio does when it gives you the squiggle telling you that that you're doing something wrong or telling you that you could do something better and giving you proposed code fixes to it. And ever since it was open sourced, you can do your code fixes yourself and decide for yourself what is important for you to be stand out from the code. Some people love and some people hate the squiggle. I personally love the squiggle when I'm developing. I hate it when it shows up in things like this. But then again, I can't really complain because I expect it to correct it, at least the obvious things, and the not so obvious things, I also expect it to correct it. So we kind of place an entire expectation on this squiggle, which is something we've taken for granted for, I think, 15 years now. It showed up in about 2004. So it's older than some people I know. It just shows that the things that we don't care about, we don't want to be bothered by them, and the things that we do care about, we want them taken care of. Not necessarily that we take care of them. Something else should, as long as we move on from that point of writing them. If it's wrong, well, and it's obvious, just deal with it. Microsoft already has you covered when it comes to squiggling. Like, everyone here uses Visual Studio. Apparently, yes. Everyone uses Visual Studio. And Microsoft has you covered in a lot of analyzers and tells you, like, if you're declaring a variable you're not going to use anytime further, it's going to single it out for you, squiggle it, and tell you, okay, you're not going to use this. Do you want me to delete this? Do you want to delete it? So it already has you covered. And the Roslyn platform has you covered for everything else. You've been incentivized to use the MSOS camp hashtag. Since I am the last presentation, I can also ask you to use another hashtag that I'm trying to make show up just because it sounds funny. No other reason. And right now, I can do that. They're not going to kick me out. So Roslyn has the also boringly known as the .NET compiler platform. As I was explaining here earlier, the name Roslyn showed up because they were hiring people for Roslyn, and they meant the city of Roslyn, and people didn't know what Roslyn was. So eventually it got this code name. They managed to integrate a syntax tree into the name, which was a very nice touch, given that it's one of the main components that we're going to use here. It's going to put you neck to neck with the Visual Studio because it's going to give you the same resources that Visual Studio has after it compiles the code that you've just written. It's going to give you an entire API to do that. What you can do here is you can analyze the code that you have just written, issue a diagnostic, and then propose a fix. Seamlessly integrated into Visual Studio after you develop it. It's going to show up exactly like the one on top, but because I didn't want to write code for every single demo that I'm going to do here, I kind of pasted this one. Just to show what it's capable of. We're going to see a live demo in a bit. It can be used for if you're worried about efficiency. We all worry about different things, and Microsoft can only cover you on the things that most of us worry about. But if you're worried specifically about efficiency, you can write analyzers to check if you're doing a division inside of a loop. And you can use that diagnostic to propose maybe you should use a bitwise operation instead of a division if you know the range of the eye. It's more nerdy stuff. And if you're worried about security, you can also use analyzers for your projects. For example, if you're developing in .NET with MVC and you are getting web requests, you want to make sure that you sanitize all the data, all the input from the users. And you can write an analyzer that says, okay, you're getting something from a web request, you're putting it into a variable, you're probably going to lose track if you sanitize it or not. So here's what you're doing. You should like at least encapsulate this in a sanitization function. So it's going to give you all the compiler resources, and you're going to be able to read and interpret and generate code. So read and interpret for the diagnosis and generate for the code fix that comes next. This is based on two essential elements. First is the syntax tree, so you get compiler 101 right now. First is the syntax tree, and then is the semantic model. The syntax tree is going to let you navigate throughout all the code in a tree-shaped thing. So it gives you the nodes in blue. They are usually constructs like declarations, statements, and expressions. They give you the tokens, the syntactic tokens. They're in green, and they are terminal. Kind of terminal, because then you have the trivia. The trivia doesn't matter for the compiler itself, but it might matter to you when you're analyzing something. For example, if you despise people who, for example, use spaces to indent, you can use that white space trivia and say, okay, you should use tabs, for example. I'm not judging necessarily. So that one's irrelevant. But the tree is always going to represent to you exactly what the source code is. And you're going to be able to tell Roslyn, okay, go through this tree and find the thing that I think is wrong so that I can issue a diagnostic. For now, everything is very in the air, then you're going to see specifically. If you're writing wrong code, well, this is the case of result equals one, so it's a simple assignment expression with a name and a literal expression, etc. But if, for example, you forget the semicolon, it is always going to try to find the closest tree that would be compilable. So you can always analyze it as if it was normal code. Your analyzer won't be stuck just because a page of 150 lines is not compiling. It is going to fill out the blanks wherever it can do so, obviously. This is the case of the missing, in case you're missing source. But if you have too much source, for example, if you put a backslash there, it may not behave as you would expect. It's not going to just, okay, I just ignore this and then result equals one. Not necessarily, because if you have a backslash there, and it may mean that you have information there that matters. It may say, okay, I've skipped the backslash, but that backslash may meant something. That person may meant to do something there. So what it does is that I put this in a block just for so I can start from a single node. What it's going to do is it's going to read the result, and okay, that's an identifier, I know that. And after, well, this is something that I don't understand. So what it's going to do is it's going to put a semicolon, because an identifier can be an expression. It's a valid expression. So it's going to do that. I'm saying, okay, this part of the code is dealt with. Then I start with an equals, and I have a one. Well, I can't do anything with this unless there is an identifier missing. And it's going to place an identifier there. So this is all done so that you can keep your analysis as if nothing was wrong. But you'll be able to know while you're doing the analysis, okay, is this something that came from a missing source? Is this something that you just inserted yourself so that it could compile? You are going to have access to all that. So Roslyn is always going to enable you to do an analysis, regardless if the developer is good or not. These are very important concepts in the beginning. They're very simple, and anyone that has dealt with compilers will be super familiar with it right now. By the way, if anyone has a correction, please do, because this is kind of new to me. The thing is that the more up you go, the more complex it gets. So the trees get increasingly big. So if you go back and you have a simplistic view on it, without all the error of all of the errors in your mind with the missing source and the skipped source, you may find complex trees that that you wouldn't imagine. Also, other than the syntax tree, because the syntax tree just gives you a very superficial view. It tells you, okay, how the code is. It doesn't tell you any meaning about it. So, compilers 101 again. The semantic model is going to give you all the meaning. Okay, so result is the same for the syntax analyzer. Syntax is going to see the result as a syntax token. It's an identifier, and all of them are the same. But with the semantic model in Roslyn, you're able to get the symbols, exactly know, okay, to what symbol does this syntax node point? And you're also going to be able to do the reverse. So you can find, okay, what does this syntax point points to this symbol? Okay, where is this symbol used else in the code? This is going to help you access everything that you may want to refactor or detect. And this is also going to give you the possibility of doing data flow analysis. So if what you want is to, instead of saying, okay, you should sanitize the input every time there is an input, you can say, okay, I'm only going to warn you if it is never sanitized between the point of entry and the point of exit. It depends on how you want to tackle the issue. However, the syntax tree lets you know where things are, and the semantic model is going to help you relate everything. Okay. So these are exactly the tools or the elements that let Visual Studio right now, or that let before there was a Roslyn, there was an open source Roslyn, to do exactly this. So when you put your cursor on top of something, it tells you, okay, it's used here, 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 and here. So you know, I've always took that for granted, and I really didn't think much about what was going on in the background. But apparently there's this entire framework. Okay, it's going to allow you to follow the data around. Like I said with the cross-site scripting avoidance, it's going to let you know, okay, where is data flowing, or this specific piece of data. Other than stalking symbols, okay, that was all about stalking symbols. So now, that is great for Visual Studio and how it worked in Visual Studio, so everything's underlying there. So how exactly can you implement this analysis? The first thing that you have to do is, this is very, it's a big mantra, know yourself. This just means, okay, what is your motivation to find the issue? Why you want to find the issue? Why is this important? Because you are going to issue a diagnostic, tell the developer, okay, this is wrong. So you're going to have a very good foundation of why is this wrong, give a description, probably give a source of where you found that is wrong, and issue an appropriate code fix. So always explain yourself and know exactly how you would defend your code fix and your diagnostic with other developers, unless you're doing this just for yourself. That's fine. Also, know your enemy. Your enemy is not the other developers. Your enemy is the syntax, is the semantic, is the stuff that you want to detect exactly. And you're going to have a lot of tools. You're going to have a few tools, not a lot, but they're really good, at your disposal in Visual Studio that are going to help you know exactly what a syntax node is, everything it has, everything that's involved in the semantic model. And you are going to be able to get a concrete shape on what you want to detect. One of the nice tools is the syntax visualizer. It's going to let you, just by clicking somewhere in your code, it's going to allow you to visualize the entire syntax tree. And this is where I pulled that tree before from, because you just right-click this and say, okay, generate me a visual tree, and you'll be able to see the entire tree and how things relate. In this example, we're using the syntax visualizer to detect the divide expression. So I go there, I click there, and if I click the result, it's going to take me to the identifier name. But if I just go up the tree, I can find the divide expression. And that's exactly what I want to find. So I know a bit of my enemy, but my enemy has two parts. It has the division and it has the loop. If I keep going up, and now I have, okay, it's a node of type binary expression syntax, and it's the kind divide expression. Okay, maybe this one is better. If I just detect everything that's kind divide expression, I'm up for a good start. And then if you keep going up, you find the for statement that encapsulates everything inside everything else inside of the node. And you know, okay, so I have the two nodes now. This for statement is of kind for statement. Okay, that's enough information. I don't need any more information about that. So now that you know your enemy, you know one node and the other, you know how they relate. So one is the parent of the other, or the parent. You have to show intent. You have to tell Roslyn, okay, from now on, you're going to give me every single node from the tree that is of type divide expression or for statement. In this case, it's better to do the divide expression because you just go up all the parents and see, okay, is there a for there? And if there's a for, you issue a diagnostic. If you do the other way around, you have to go through all the childs and it might be a huge mess. A good reverse case would be, for example, to detect if you have a certain string inside of an array, then you don't necessarily want to check all the strings, but you want to check all the arrays if they have the string inside. But we're going to see a demo on how to do all this. Okay, then you do the logic. So basically what I just said here, if you have subscribed or if you have registered to say, okay, give me into my function that I'm going to use to analyze, give me everything that is of kind divide expression, and your logic is going to be, okay, I'm going to follow the parents and see until I have no one left if there's a for statement up there. You don't actually have to go through all the parents. There is a function that does that. It's a first ancestor or self, and you give the kind, and it's going to tell you if there's anything behind there. And if you find it, you're going to issue a diagnostic. And this is the part that might, well, if you're developing for yourself, it makes no difference, but if you're developing for other people, this is where you choose the level of annoyance. So you can issue a diagnostic that's hidden. That's no fun, but it can help you keep track of things. You can use the platform also as kind of a diagnostic repository. If you have a code fix, you can keep things hidden just so that if you have to refactor a little bit and you know it affects other parts of the document, you can keep those hidden, just highlight this one, and when you apply the code fix, it also fixes the others without having to squiggle absolutely everything. The info one, it just allows you to give some information. You can choose to be passive aggressive with it also, because you're not even going to propose much. It's just some information. You can if you want. Or you have the warning, and that one's going to be a bit more annoying. The squiggle's going to turn yellow, but it's not going to force you anything. Or you can break their build. This one's the best one. It's an error. You can't build anything unless you either fix it or you can disable the diagnostic. As a developer, you just go to the analyzers, but that kind of defeats the purpose. Regardless of if you want to annoy them or not, it's always good to provide an explanation. I'm going to repeat this over and over, because I saw some code fixes, some warnings. I was like, this is wrong. okay, so that doesn't help me. Okay, remember two things. You're not alone. This is not emotional support. It just means you're sharing resources with everyone else. So when you write an analyzer and you see that, okay, I've analyzed so far, or I went so far up the parents, or I've analyzed the child nodes as far as I could, I've already determined that it's probably not going to be possible to issue a diagnostic. Stop, because you have 200 other diagnostics, including from Microsoft, that come in Visual Studio, that are going to be running parallel to yours, using the same tree, using the same semantic models. These are all immutable. going to talk about that after. If you see that you're not going anywhere with your analysis, just stop. Because every time there's a keystroke, an entirely new tree is generated. And that means that a cancellation token is sent to all the analyzers, and the new tree is made available for all the analyzers. So they're all going to end, and they're all going to start on the new document, because it's a completely new document for them, even if you're just typing a space. Because there's the trivia somewhere that might be useful to you in an analyzer. It might be a series of spaces in the beginning of a line. It's going to be called as many times, your analysis is going to be called as many times as there are tokens of the type you registered. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's correct. And the cancellation tokens are only good if you're playing nicely. If you're hogging resources, the cancellation token is going to take longer to get to you also. Because your analysis is going to be run as a single task, as an independent task. Okay. Everything is immutable. If you think about code fixes, you think, okay, but like in a code fix, I just want to change something. Well, if you're doing analysis, that's terrible, because if you're halfway through the analysis and all your environment changes, you really don't want things to change while you're doing an analysis. You state a fact in the beginning, and when you reach the end, that fact may not be true. So everything here is immutable. You get all the objects that are immutable. What you can do is, other than the analysis itself, when you're code fixing, what you can do is generate an entire document based on the tree that was provided to you, only with the code fix. That doesn't change anything. It just gives you a mirrored image, and that just reflects the new node that you've created, the one that you've removed, and the replacement. This is also good because it avoids racing. If you have 150 analyzers going on at the same time, and you expect it to give you a squiggle in useful time instead of just this. And I've done this because I've installed Visual Studio 2015 in an old computer, thinking it would be enough. I've experienced going through the wait for the squiggle syndrome. So it avoids racing, and it avoids all the nasty stuff that has to do with analysis having to be based on a static element. Okay. Then, after you having all your analysis, knowing that everything is immutable, you've already registered your intent, so you've already told Roslyn where you want to join in the party. With all that information, you can actually propose a fix. So you have a bunch of right tools for that job. The Microsoft.code analysis namespace has everything for you to manipulate syntax trees, analyze. You can find the symbols, do that whole back and forth thing, follow the data around. You can use the rename to, for example, if you're not using camel case somewhere and you write your own camel case analyzer, you say, okay, you're not using camel case here, so I'm going to rename this variable. Do you want me to rename this variable? Then you use the rename for that. So there's already a lot of tools that you can use. I myself don't know all of them because they're really a lot. But you're going to use, for example, the editing to edit the syntax tree, which is not really editing, it's kind of cheating, because what it does is just generate a new one. You're going to be able to use the editing.generate syntax token that you're going to use to generate your new one, and then tell, okay, I want this tree, but instead of this node, I want this new node that I've created. This is the code fix. And then, because the source code and the syntax tree have to always be built from one another, and you have to keep integrity between them. Roslyn does that for you. You will generate the entire source code, and you're going to replace the entire source code with your new tree representation in source code form. Yep. Okay. Then, now that you know what you want to fix, and you know that you have the tools, you have to make a very specific promise. The best thing to do is like do one thing and do it well. So if you have a certain diagnostic, for example, this is not camel case, write one function, one code fix that fixes camel case. That's it. That's it. Because, and also with one analyzer, you can generate several. So usually people think, okay, I have one analyzer and I have one code fix for what that analyzer detects. But you can issue five different diagnostics because one mistake can mean two different things for you. So you can issue two diagnostics and you should always keep one code fix per diagnostic and not analyzer. Okay, and you have to fulfill that promise, so you have to generate a new document, do it well, give it back, and it will replace, this all seamless in the Visual Studio, it will replace the entire source code. So we're going to have the live demo now. That was it. That was the super quick part. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to sit down because it's way more comfortable. Let me see if I can. I'm gonna steal this from you for a bit, and expand, duplicate. Okay, let's see. Go, go, go. Okay, perfect. So, in Visual Studio, if you want to develop with Roslyn, you have to install the .NET Platform Compiler SDK. When you go to new project, you have the extensibility tab. So you need to have the extensibility component. You can use it with the Visual Studio installer. It's already there. And then you have the download the .NET Compiler Platform SDK button. And all these things will show up to you, including one that is really nice. That's the analyzer with code fix, NuGet plus V6. So this will automatically create a NuGet package that you can put in your NuGet server and deploy wherever. And it's also going to generate an extension for Visual Studio if you want to put it in the store, or if you want to just deploy it in a few computers at your company, you can do that. So instead of opening it, what I did was, because it already opens the demo and it already has some code fixes and etc., I have cheated a bit, so I have the OS Camp Analyzer that has all the same things, but it's empty. It has only the files that we need to start. So it generates you a portable project. This is where you're going to code everything. I chose C#, but you can develop the same thing in Visual Basic. Also, you can create analyzers and code fixes for Visual Basic in C# and vice versa. And you can do the one analyzer for both languages because everything is going to be based in the syntactic tree, and that's generated from both languages in the same way. And you can create by developing this in C#, you can create code fixes and everything for both languages. It's going to also create you a test. But no one does unit testing like they should. And it also creates you the V6 project. Always check that you have the V6 selected as the startup project, because what this does is when you press start, it launches another instance of Visual Studio with the extension installed. So it's kind of a VSception. You're extremely slow right now. Okay, and this is the dark version of Visual Studio. I just use this to differentiate. Okay, and after you open a project, I've opened kind of a victim project. I've created a victim project, a small console application, where we have just like simple code, string, int, char, list. Well, and what I'm going to try and do is create an analyzer that is going to detect all the declarations, all the types, and tell me, okay, you could use var here. Do you want me to use var? And I'm going to go, yes, I do, and it's going to use the code fix to replace that. So, because it's a lot of code, and instead of debugging, I actually want to present. I have the code with me, but I'll follow along. Okay, so the first thing you have to do, this diagnostic analyzer is already going to be here for you after you do the template. but filled. And the first one of the first things you're going to see is that it extends the diagnostic analyzer. Okay. This is going to allow you to override the entry points that Roslyn expects there to be in an analyzer in order to for you to be able to do the analysis. Sorry, okay. You're going to give it an attribute. You're going to say, okay, this is a diagnostic analyzer. And you're going to give it the languages. This is that part that I was talking about. So you can go language names dot C sharp. You can choose Visual Basic. In this case, I'm just going to choose C sharp. And Roslyn is going to know, okay, this is an analyzer for C sharp only. If you want to put more, you can actually list them. So I'm not lying. You can actually do several ones. Okay. So now we have an analyzer, so let's get to know ourselves first. Okay, so let's see. Let's pick a diagnostic ID. So we need to be able to... Okay, so we need to be able to ID this diagnostic uniquely. Okay, so we're going to call it OSS camp. This is terrible, I can't even get the name of the event right. Okay. I'm not overriding anything. Right now I'm just getting all the information that I need. I'm going to need a category. So we can say, for example, because we want to do all the var thing, we're going to say type enforcement, and we're going to put on the, every other analyze enforcement. So every other analyzer that does anything that's related to type enforcement will be able to be aggregated in Visual Studio. Okay, we're going to give it a title. This starts to be a bit more descriptive. So the title can be, okay, you're not using a dynamic type, which apparently for me is a problem. And we are going to give it a message format. This message format is what you're going to be able to adapt dynamically depending on the context. For example, if you're using a string, you might say, okay, this is a string and it could be a var. But you don't know if it is always a string, so you can use a format to format. Equals, for example, type whatever could be a var. Okay. We're still getting to know ourselves. And then you have to put just a description. Okay. These are all things that that are going to be needed for Visual Studio to to actually use your analyzer. Okay. Using dynamic is good. Okay. This is a terrible example. Okay. I didn't override anything, and I'm not going to override anything yet. I'm just preparing. Now I'm going to create a diagnostic descriptor. This is the object that's going to be passed around inside so that we don't have to pass each one of the things. So we're going to do private static. Yeah, I said passed around, but I'm doing private. We'll see. Read-only. Okay. Not read-only. That's my bad. Okay, diagnostic descriptor. Where is it? There you go. I'm going to call it rule, for example. New diagnostic descriptor. And now it asks us for a bunch of things. So it's an ID. We already have all this stuff. That's a diagnostic ID. There you are. A title. That's a title. Message format. That's a message format. We already have all this stuff. The category, so that it can aggregate stuff. Category. And now the default severity. That's the part where you decide exactly how much you want to annoy. So we can do diagnostic severity. Let's be nice and say just warning. Okay. Could be nicer, but... Okay. then we can say that if it's enabled by default, it's true. And we have the description to put still. There we go. Okay. Okay. Sorry?
We're using not static variables and a static
one. Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Private static variables. Wait, where?
Okay, the door is automatically.
You're right. Okay. This should work like this, though. String title. I'm sorry, am I missing something? Jesus. See, that's why the squiggles are good. Okay, and then I have to do all this. I just wanted to move along quicker, and usually that's counterproductive. There we go, done. Okay, so now we have a rule, and this has done absolutely nothing yet. So we're going to start overriding things. And one of the things we can override is the supported diagnostics. And since everything is immutable, instead of getting a throw new not implemented, because we don't care about this, we're going to throw a but we're going to return a new immutable array. Dot create. Hello. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Okay. You're going to see a lot of this. Okay. So we're saying, okay, what diagnostics does this support? We've created a diagnostic here. And now we're going to do the override of the initialize. And here in the initialize is where you're going to register your intent. So you're going to call the context dot register. And then you can register on a lot of things. Code blocks, compilation actions, semantic modes, symbols. In this case, we are going to want a syntax node action. Here we go. So whenever you find a syntax node, right here, yes, okay. So whenever you find a syntax node, it always uses a context, so you can use a lambda here and say, okay, give that context to my analyze node method and send it the context every time that you find anything of a certain syntax kind. So you can call the syntax kind dot variable declaration. And here in the syntax kind, you have all the syntax kinds that there can be in a tree. Okay. So every time that there is a variable declaration, I haven't done this one yet, every time there is a variable declaration, Roslyn is going to call this this analyzer for you. So you can just do private static analyze node, and it gets a syntax node analysis context. I'm a slow coder, sorry. Okay. So now you have the, So now you have the analyzer. No longer an error here. That right now does absolutely nothing. You don't have to return anything from it, but you do have to do the analysis, and here's where you do the logic. Okay, I have a context. That context has a lot of things, including the cancellation token, etc., and the node that it stopped at, or that it's given. So I'm going to use this to detect if it is a declaration that is not a var. So I'm going to check for the type. Declare the type node equals, and you do the context dot the node that was given to me dot. And here is the interesting part. I am being given a variable declaration, but I don't really know where that is. I haven't really analyzed my enemy. So what I can do is, okay, I have some here that are declarations. So let's pull the syntax analyzer. Let's see, other windows, syntax visualizer, sorry. Here we go, okay. So what is this? Okay, this here is an identifier token. Okay, I think I need this identifier token, but I can only see the variable declarators. So let me see, in a variable declarator, I can view the directed syntax graph. And I have, okay. So, no, this doesn't have the var yet. Bad example. I still have to go up one here in the variable declaration. Okay, now I have the string. I can do view directed syntax graph, and I know, okay, the string is here. And I am getting the node variable declaration because that's what I registered for. So what I'm going to do is I have to go to the first child and then check if the one below it is a string. And is the string? No, if it's not a var. And if it's not a var, then I issue a diagnostic. Okay, so what I'm going to do is, okay, I am in the top node. So I'm going to check for the child nodes. Okay, then I want the first of that one. Then I'm not going to do any checks for null, because it would just take even more time. And then I'm going to do all the child nodes, and I get the first. I do not recommend doing this in production. Okay, so now we have, what is the declared type token? Okay, and now that we have it, we have the token itself, and the token is this green thing here. We're going to see if the value of it is something different from var. So, if the not the declared type token dot, and I'm going to write text here. Valid text. Sorry, this one is not giving me exactly what I expected. Context nodes, child nodes first. Child tokens. Because here I want, okay, the child nodes, and then I want the child tokens, not the child nodes. Okay. Okay, so I do dot, and I have the token. So I want to see if the text itself is var. I suggest you do the value text, because in other things, for example, like strings, the text gives you the quotes, and the value text doesn't. It's always the whatever is inside. I'm going to see if it equals var. If it doesn't equal var, then it's something else, okay. And I'm going to, if that really happens, I'm going to issue a diagnostic. So I'm going to be do var diagnostic equals diagnostic dot create. And now I'm going to give it the descriptor. That's our rule. And I'm going to give it the location of where I found it. And this is where the squiggle is going to appear. So you might want to make the squiggle appear somewhere else. In this case, we're going to make it appear in the declared type token dot location. Okay, let's get the location. And I'm gonna enter this, okay. We are going to give it the arguments for the message. So where we placed the zero here to give information, this is the point where we can actually insert data into the diagnostic. So we're going to give it the the text itself. So declared type token dot text, and that's going to give it either it's the string or the list or whatever it or whatever the developer placed there. Okay, and then you go to the context and you do report diagnostic and you give it a diagnostic. Okay, and this is your analyzer. It just detects if there's a anything that isn't var under that node, and it should run. But since a lot of things have not run correctly, we're going to see if it does. Let me just see if okay, hi Senpai. Okay. Okay, so right now, the Visual Studio, inside of the Visual Studio, it's its own thing. It has its own configurations. You can change it as if it was a user in itself. And it actually has all its configurations in a different folder. That is usually the Visual Studio 2015-Roslyn, instead of -RC Silva or whatever user you're using as a base. Well, you can do it. Oh, there you are, hidden. Okay, perfect. Okay, so I open that victim application. And right now it's opening. No error yet, but it shows me the squiggle. Okay, and when I hover over a squiggle, it says type string could be var. So this is the effect of a diagnostic. All this work that really wasn't much. All this work to make that squiggle appear. What we don't have is a code fix, so it doesn't show up that little light bulb and help fix. But we are going to do that now. By the way, I have to demonstrate. Of course, if I write var, okay, it stops. So this is not sleight of hand or anything. Okay, but for the demonstration purpose, I'm going to keep this like string. Okay. And after the analysis, or the analyzer, we also have the code fix provider. And we're going to follow exactly the same things, use the same kind of tools. The first thing that we are going to do, and I want to make sure that I get it right this time. Here we go. Okay. First thing we're going to do is extend the code fix provider. Okay. And we're going to flag it to be exported. So we're going to do an export codefix provider. We're going to give it a language name. C# this case. Okay, and we're going to give it a name equals name of. Okay, OSCamp codefix provider. Okay, that's going to be its name. It's whatever the name of it is. This one is great. And we're going to declare this export shared. Okay, so, and now we are going to write exactly the thing. So, private const string title. We're going to have to give it a title. And this is already the stage of code fixing, so we should be descriptive in what we are going to do. So we're going to change the type to var. Done. Okay, that's the title. That's what's going to show like right under the light bulb. I'm going to do public sealed override. Okay, and we're going to do the fixable diagnostics. Here's the thing of always fix one thing very well. So we're going to return an immutable array dot create, not a new immutable array. OS camp analyzer. This is a bad choice of words. And the diagnostic ID. So here we say, okay, we can fix these diagnostics, okay, which is one. Done. Right. And we are now going to register the code fix. So going to override the register code fixes async. Okay. Now we are in the semantic part. We're in the code fix part. So first of all, we want to get a hold of the tree itself. So we're going to get the root first. This is an asynchronous call, so we have to await the context.document. That we're always working on a certain context. Get syntax root async. Okay, and we're going to give it the cancellation token because we want this task to be accessible in case the user changes the code mid-analysis. So we're going to give it the cancellation token. Then, optionally, we can do the configure await and say, okay, if this context is captured in any way, we're going to say don't wait, just go ahead. Okay. Let me take this one out because this one is not useful anymore. Okay. I missed something here. The document gets syntax. Sorry? Configure operator. Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay. This is the good thing about the squiggle. Always tells you. Okay. So. Let's see what diagnostic we have. Var diagnostic equals the context dot diagnostics dot first. Why? Because this a code fix can be called for several diagnostics. In this case, since I'm doing one diagnostic, one code fix, I always get the first. But you have access to a list of diagnostics that can call this code fix. And then var declared type node. We want to get a handle of the node itself because we want to know what we want to replace. Equal root. So we have the root of the tree. We just find the node. This one is pretty straightforward. And we're going to give it the location on the source. So in everything, you can always relate all these entities to themselves, to each other. So you can just give it the diagnostic dot location dot source span. So that means like the beginning, from the beginning to the end of that source code, and it is going to give you whatever node. Fits it better right after. Not whatever is inside of that span, but whatever is immediately outside of that span. Okay, and now you're going to register the code fix. So you do context, pretty much the same stuff as the other one. You do register code fix. And you're going to have to create a code action. This is where this is the call to the function that's really going to fix it. So you do code action dot create, and you give it the title, okay, which is going to be pretty straightforward. And here you can use a lambda expression. You can do c to come. Okay, change to var type. Okay, you give it the document so that it knows, okay, where do I get the information. You can give it the declared node type, the declared type node. That's going to tell you, okay, this is the one I want to replace, and the token, cancellation token. Okay. Okay. And the diagnostic. Okay, not going to go into a lot of detail there. Okay, there's no change to var type now, but we can create one. Probably there's a squiggle for that. There we go. Okay, perfect. It creates a task, it returns a document. This one's pretty straightforward. Okay. And now we're going to do the, after we have registered, we register the fix, we're going to do the fix itself. We're going to get the root through the same method. I'm not even going to bother getting it wrong. Okay. If you want to use the function, create the function in order to be able to pass the root already, you can. Here we go. There we go again. Okay. Wait, here. Okay. Push to. You're right. I already have the document. And here it's the C. Okay, that's what copy paste can do for you. Okay. Then you create the var new node. And for this, you're going to use in one of these in one of these namespaces, there's a syntax factory that's going to allow you to generate any kind of syntactic node that you want. And right now we're going to want to do the var node. We may think that it's a type or whatever, but var is really seen as an identifier. So we're going to have to create an identifier. We could use, for example, anything that has to do with other types, but for this case we have to use an identifier name and say, okay, I want a var here. Give me a node that is of type identifier name and var. Okay. And then var new root. And because everything is immutable, what you're going to say is that you want the root with the replace node, and you give it the old node, so it's the node you want to replace, that's the declared type, whatever that's the developer declared type node, and you're going to change it with the new node. Okay. And then you're going to return the, again, everything's immutable, you're going to return the document, but with a new syntax root, which is the one that you have created, the new root. You don't want to change anything for the other analyzers. And this is a code fix. That's pretty much everything that you need to make this work. And if we start, we should be able to see it already integrated. Let me see if it doesn't go under there. Oh no, now you show up. Okay. Okay. You can go to console application. That's my victim application. You wait a bit because they're fighting over the analysis. And you know the analyzer is there. Type string could be var. But when you click it, it should show. I've seen, well, actually, you see here you can see like the entire description. But I've seen in one of the other presentations, a guy had this problem and he had to kind of kick things a bit. So what he did was he went to the, let me see, I'm running this as 222 users. We're going to see that whole Roslyn thing. Utilizadores, it's in Portuguese, sorry. Silva. App data. Roaming, Microsoft, I think. And VVVV. Visual Studio. Ah, here we go. Okay, these are the settings for the version. I'm running in the Visual Studio version 14, which I think is 2015. I'm just going to delete that. Oh, no, actually, I am going to delete the It was one of these. Well, I think I'm just going to delete the entire thing. There we go. Okay. Or was it... Ah! My bad. Local, Microsoft, Visual Studio, Roslyn, and... Ah, MEF cache. Okay, that's the one that I have to delete, I think. Not sure. Let's give it a try. I haven't yet understood exactly why that one has to be deleted. Let's go. Okay. We have the analyzer working. And no little squiggly. So, what I'm going to try, just in case this was a mistake on my part. Okay. I'm going to open this with a... There you go. Shh, don't tell anyone. Code fix provider. Okay. With the version that I had here, just to see if the mistake is on my part. I had it saved from when it worked. Of course. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Nope. Okay. Well, I can show. Yeah. It shows a little light bulb. It's beautiful. You can choose fix or fix all in the document, and it's really, really nice. Okay. Imagining that part worked, then you're gonna have it here listed in the analyzers. If you if the developer can open the active rule set. And you're going to see here your, here we go. Oh. Wait. Yeah. Open active. It does not want to cooperate. Oh well. I don't think I'll be showing it working right now. But if you want to take a look for yourselves on the... Sorry?
It is a warning right now. If you change the level...
Yeah.
It might work.
Okay, let's give it a try. At least we can see the change, for example, if we go error. And save, and start, and 2 minutes after. This is amazing. I think I'm the fourth person with whom a demo doesn't work today. There's a ghost going around, because I've seen demos not working in other presentations, but for some reason, I think this place is haunted today only. Okay. No, it doesn't want you to fix your own mistakes. No, it just makes you deal with it and guess. Well, not really guess, because the type string could be var. It really says it. But yes, for some reason it's not working. I don't really know why. Okay, take a look at it, though, at the whole platform, not the problem. Take a look at it in the .NET Roslyn GitHub. This is all open source. You can contribute. I haven't contributed to this single thing. I'm just supporting the big industries. I just go there to get. Or you can check on the channel 9. Josh Varty is an expert on this. He has very good introduction videos on channel 9. And there is also his WordPress that I recommend. It has a very thorough, humanly written. It doesn't feel like documentation. It literally feels like you're going through it. So check this one too. And if you want to see actual implementations, very good implementations, check the GitHub for .NET Security Guard. It's an extension that tries to tackle everything security and tries to make you OWASP compliant. And if you're if you want something even more grand, you can check sonatalint.org. They try to implement all the rules that are bundled in the static analysis tool SonarQube, if anyone has ever heard about that. They are all in GitHub, so you have everything here to check. And that's it. I wish it had worked, but yeah, I hope at least you're curious now. Okay, that's it. Yes. Okay. Any questions? Yeah.
When we have the list of analysis,
yes.
There are numbers in parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
What was the numbers?
Let me check.
Because it's not the number of the line.
On the analyzer, so here on the right.
No, no. When there is a new window that is opening,
mm-hmm.
with the steps, the logical steps that it encounters. And there is in parentheses, numbers, pop-up numbers, parentheses.
Ah, in the, I know. In the, let me just see if this is what you mean. These?
Yes, upper.
Let me see, I have a better one here. Here.
No. Where you were just before.
Yes, here.
You have
That is the span. That is in which character of the code it is, and it starts in which character of the code it ends. Yeah, it always gives you, like, it always helps you backtrack to where in the source that is. So you can always work from the source to the syntax if you give it just like random character, and it tells you, okay, this is the token that that character is, because around it, this is the node that fits best, or the token that fits best.
But it's not easy to find back with this number, because you
You don't have to know it, because it's in a property somewhere. So you just ... everything. Yes. Yeah. So you can use it. For example, at my work. Okay, I have to be careful with this because I can talk about a lot of specifics when it comes to implementation. But for example, there is like a set of forbidden words inside strings. And one of the options that I got was, okay, I need to analyze all strings to see if there's a forbidden word there that you can't say. For example, imagine another company that is a competitor and you don't want to show anywhere. So instead of saying, okay, I ask to analyze the string, I get the string, and I see, okay, does this string contain this? Then I send a diagnostic, but in the diagnostic, instead of sending the span of the full string, I see, okay, in which index is that word, where does it end? And then I say, okay, I want the squiggle to go from to start in the start of the string plus the index and end at whatever length that word is. And it's going to give me only that that little bit. But if I can use that to say, okay, like in the code, I want to know which node it is, and it's always going to give me the string because it's encapsulated. So you can play with these spans around a bit.
I don't remember, but if we click on some lines here,
mm-hmm.
does it show where it is?
On the syntax visualizer. You can actually, okay, let's see, view other windows. Syntax visualizer. If you just click, for example, message format here, it's going to tell you, okay, it's an identifier token. This here is actually selected. I don't think you can see it there very clearly. There's like a bit of a gray behind it. And it's telling you, okay, it goes from this character to this character, and then tells you all the properties. Yes, you can go up the tree, for example, and it gives you the entire variable declarator, and you can just keep going up. And if you want, you can, for example, select one of them, for example, okay, this one might be a good one for analysis. You right click it and you say, okay, I want to see this graphically. Okay, so view directed syntax graph, and it will generate you eventually one day. Let me see if it's here. Oh, okay, yeah, here we go. It'll generate you the entire graph, and you can consult exactly the same information by hovering over. Yeah, so you can have a more visual feeling of it. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
What's the best way to distribute this analysis for the whole team? It's we have to have it in NuGet.
Yeah, you can use the NuGet if you have a repository, and they're all subscribing to that. The problem is with the NuGet, you're probably going to have to carry the analyzers around inside of the projects. So it might be a good thing to, instead of polluting the project with the analyzer, since they're only a developer side thing, it might be a good solution for you to implement an extension repository. Microsoft has all the information in MSDN on how you can make your own extension server and register it along all the Visual Studios in.
And then all developers will need to install it.
They will have.
No way, like just in the project to reference it in
every. In the project, you can use the NuGet. If you want to use the analyzers for a specific project and create analyzers for a specific project, a NuGet then is best because it's always going to be aggregated in the project itself. So wherever the project goes, the analyzers go with it and break builds wherever. If you have, for example, in a company that develops several products at the same time for several other companies, it might be a good idea if you don't want to hit attach to a single project to use a store instead. Depends on how you want to approach it. Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Visualizer is out of the box.
It is inside Visual Studio on the it's on the extensibility component. So when you install it, I believe you have to explicitly say, okay, I want the extensibility because I want to develop extensions for Visual Studio. Okay. And then it gives you the tools about the compiler and everything that you should need to do that. So yeah, and it shows up in other windows, so it's pretty hidden.
And it's working for JavaScript.
No, it's working for the .NET, the compilables, not the interpretables. Yes. Yeah. So it does C Sharp and Visual Basic, I think, right now. That's it. Yeah.
And C++?
I don't think yet, but soon. If you want, you can contribute on the GitHub. If you want to help, they are really all hands on deck. So if you can contribute, they would really appreciate. Yeah, anyone. Okay. All right. Nice. Cool. Nice. Cool.